Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Popular Education Radio, a program about music, history, and general disobedience. I am your host, Tammy. So happy to see you. Well, I guess I'm not seeing you. You're just hearing me. Anyways, today's episode is going to be about climate change and environmental consciousness. Today in history, 12/12 in 2015, that's when the Paris Agreement happened. For those of you who might not know, the Paris Global Agreement, the central aim was to find a global response to the threat of climate change. And the gist of it was, what they figured out is that by keeping a global temperature rise this century well below 2 degrees Celsius, which is above pre-industrial levels, that would be a good place to start. So, 4 years ago today, a summit in Paris, 174 countries gathered with the objective of achieving, for the first time in over 20 years of UN negotiations, a binding and universal agreement on climate. So that's why I have Jenna Gostom, who is the Deputy Director of Programming for the Oregon Environmental Council, come on the show and tell us about A, the Green New Deal, B, about what the council is doing, and C, what you can do to maximize your efforts in minimizing your personal global footprint. Of course, you, the listener, if you have any questions or want to send me some information or anything, you can feel free to do so by reaching out to me online. Social media handle name is at Popular Education Radio, and there's the good old Gmail, which is populareducationradio@gmail.com. All that I do it for you, the listener. So really, it's always nice to hear feedback. And so far, it's been pretty positive. So, you know, we can keep it on that trajectory. Anyways, without further ado, here is my interview with Jenna Gostom.
My name is Jenna Gostom, and I'm the Deputy Director for Programs at Oregon Environmental Council. Working at Oregon Environmental Council means I get to connect with people across the state on critically important issues to our environment, to our economy, and to how livable our communities can be. For the past 10 years, I've been the Climate Program Director, which means I've gotten to work on statewide policy on a whole range of issues. I've gotten to work on thinking about how do we make our homes and buildings more energy efficient, which not only saves energy and means we don't have to build that next big polluting power plant, but also literally makes homes and businesses warmer and cozier, more livable, and even quieter. And so I really love the places where there's an intersection between real quality of life, environmental benefit, and the health of people and communities. The other thing that I've gotten to work on for Oregon Environmental Council and our climate program is also cleaning up the transportation sector. Oregon has this long history of really being on the front end of thinking about how we do things better and more cleanly and more equitably. And so a long time ago, Oregon was one of the first states to adopt what are called the Clean Car Standards, which meant that we wanted the vehicles sold here in Oregon to be much more fuel efficient, which cuts down on traffic pollution. And traffic pollution is one of the biggest sources of air pollution in our state. Cleaner cars also mean that we're saving on how much fuel a car uses, so that puts money back in people's pockets. And more fuel efficient vehicles also cut climate pollution. And so you get a triple win for air quality, climate, and cost savings for families. Those clean car standards are under threat by the Trump administration right now. They're trying to roll them back and slow them down. And that's why working at the state level continues to be so important. And we love that Oregon is a leadership state in so many ways, and Oregon needs to keep being a leadership state. We also work on clean water issues, making sure that people have access to clean water and that there's plenty of water available to fish and farms and forests and the ecosystems that we have throughout the state. People would be surprised that actually many of our waterways are pretty polluted, and there are new threats to our waterways like microplastics. And so Oregon Environmental Council is really thinking about how do we plan for our water future, both now and into the coming decades, when we have new threats like climate change overlaying it and new sources of pollution that we have to clean up as well.
Wow, that sounds like a lot.
It's really neat, though. Oregon Environmental Council, you know, has been a multi-issue organization throughout its history, and it's really driven by what are the needs that we have in the state, and how can we add value to that conversation. And OEC really looks at how do we get to the systems change. We've focused on and specialized in statewide policy because so many of these issues require systems change. It's hard for an individual alone to make all the changes that need to happen. And so it's a really exciting opportunity to work on statewide policy because it matters so much for making the big types of change that we need.
Now, you mentioned so much, but one of the things that I noticed is the Vision for Justice and the Justice, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Program. And I'm kind of wondering, why were they created? What was the need that those programs filled?
Well, yeah, we created the Justice, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion programs here at OEC because, I mean, racial and social inequities are really prevalent in America today. It exists throughout every system that we have, and including how we make laws and policies and what the impact of current pollution is. There are real injustices and inequities, and the environmental movement has a responsibility to be a part of the solution. We're all people in this world, and we also know that having a diversity of perspectives and lived experiences mean that we have opportunities to have richer solutions that are lasting and more transformational as well. So we need everyone being able to realize their full potential in our society to be able to tackle these really big challenges. But we have to undo a lot of the systemic wrongs that have been done in order to get to those bigger, better solutions as well. And, you know, when it comes to environmental harm, there are frontline communities that are impacted first and worst, whether it's conventional air pollution, like we have along roadways, or climate impacts. And so we have to be really, really intentional in the solutions that we put forward and make sure that the benefits are really reaching all communities. And we need to work extra hard to make sure that benefits actually accrue to communities that have been underrepresented and underinvested in as well. Mm-hmm. So OEC sees this as a real opportunity. It bolsters the work that we do. It enriches the work we do. And it means we get to work with a broader set of people coming up with really creative ideas and solutions. So it's a real benefit across the board.
Yeah, I totally agree with you that, it gives the space for POC to get involved in, unfortunately, a situation that's been harming them. I appreciate that. And speaking of harm, you mentioned that the current administration is rolling back a lot of laws that were created for environmental safety. So I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about would the Green New Deal be able to help those, or the Green New Deal, and how will it be able to help us who is going to be affected by it?
Yeah, well, the Green New Deal, and I should really just acknowledge up front that there are a lot of groups throughout Oregon and across the country who are working on the Green New Deal. And I really hope that the voices who are very much kind of at the center of that conversation also have an opportunity to weigh in. And I just really want to appreciate and acknowledge the work that so many other people are doing in this space. And it really does. It takes a community to move forward on really big climate solutions. But to me, the Green New Deal really is about having a framework that puts forward, you know, a solution on that has a scale of ambition that meets the scale of the challenge. And when it comes to climate change, we know that we need to stop doing harm, right? So fossil fuels are creating tremendous amounts of climate pollution. And the first tenet is just don't make the problem worse. We really can't be building out a lot of new fossil fuel-based infrastructure. So we've got to stop making the problem worse. If we're in a hole, stop digging it deeper, right? So that is one of the first platforms of the Green New Deal. The second thing is to say that in transforming our economy to be driven by clean energy, that is going to require, you know, massive investments. And that creates really a lot of opportunities. But those opportunities really need to be shared by all communities. And so it's really looking at how are we making sure that we're creating good quality jobs along the way. We want the transition to clean energy to really support Stanley wage jobs. And we want there to be good, strong worker protections. That's just good for building an equitable community as well. So how we use our energy, where it comes from, all matters. And it really should be looking at the cleanest forms of energy and how we can get there as quickly as possible, but also making sure that lower-income communities have access to the benefits of clean energy as well, and making sure that we have programs and opportunities, creating structures for people to share in those benefits. Other pieces of it are really also focused on, you know, every sector of the economy can contribute to climate pollution, and so we've got to take a special focus on transportation as well. Again, transportation creates a tremendous amount of air pollution, but it's also the largest sector contributing to climate pollution in Oregon. So we also need clean transportation choices and options. And that means everything from really amping up how much we invest in transit and making sure that transit serves the people who need it the most, but also is an option for daily commuters. It is fast, it's convenient, and it's a beautiful experience to ride on. We should really be investing in our transit systems. It also means making biking and walking more accessible and safer. We don't even have, you know, accessible sidewalks for a lot of people. How do we expect people to get around mm-hmm. without vehicles if we can't even have, you know, basic safety taken care of? So we need to invest in those things that make communities more livable and walkable and bikeable as well. And then we also need to electrify our transportation system. The incredible thing about electric vehicles is that they put out zero tailpipe pollution. There is no tailpipe. And electric vehicles are much, much more efficient than internal combustion engines. So you get a massive reduction in air pollution, you reduce climate pollution, and those vehicles are way cheaper to operate and maintain. You don't have to put, you know, oil in coolants and things into an electric vehicle because the engines just don't get as hot. They're way more efficient. So it saves people money and how they refuel and maintain their cars as well.
Hmm. In your mind, what would Portland look like if the Green New Deal is passed and everyone follows the guideline? What kind of tangible results do you see for Portland?
Oh, I see a lot. I would see, more people out walking and biking in their communities. Mm-hmm. Right now, I think a lot of people feel closed off from their neighbors, and this would make more connected communities. I would see more bus lanes, you know, that make a really fast and speedy commute in by bus. I would see more trees in neighborhoods that don't have them. So again, you're getting something that's beautiful, but you're also cooling areas and spaces. I would see things like, some of these things are a little bit more invisible, but when you turn on your light switch, you would know that it was clean, renewable energy that was powering your home, not coal and dirtier natural gas. I would see a lot more investment in kind of greenways as well. And I would see that more people are being able to own and benefit from that clean energy technology. So I would see more solar on community centers and schools. I would see hospitals also being operated by more renewables as well. And throughout all of that, it would mean that we have more resilient communities as well. We would make sure that we have spaces that are safe for people on really, really hot days, our elderly populations and sick places. So all of this really adds up to me to really much more livable, healthy, and connected communities.
Good evening. You are listening to Popular Education Radio. I'm your host, Tammy. And currently we're listening to Jana Gostom, the Deputy Director for Programming at the Oregon Environmental Council, talk about global warming, what the organization is doing to combat global warming, and just an array of different things on the subject. Coming up next in the interview, I talk with Jana about how global warming and all of the projects that the council is doing will affect farmland and people that aren't necessarily living in cities. Thank you for tuning in. Again, my name is Tammy, and this is Popular Education Radio. Now, how would this affect places that are more rural or farmland, you know, places that are kind of just further away from the city lines?
Yeah, I think these ideas really benefit all corners of our state. So in more rural areas, rural areas also want more transit and more options, especially for more aging populations. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's really hard for a lot of people to get to medical appointments if they don't have a vehicle or if they're aging. So I would see, again, opportunities for people to have transportation options that are cleaner and convenient. I would see work on the landscape being done in a way that captures carbon, improves soil health, and really supports the sustainable practices that I think a lot of farmers and ranchers believe in and want to be able to invest in. But we as a community would be helping them be able to put those practices into place in deeper ways, and really rewarding the good stewards of the land as well. I would see more opportunities for healthy forests, which means stands that are longer, that have older trees in them, and that have practices that really help maintain watersheds and habitat corridors so that you're getting multiple benefits off of the landscape while you're also getting the economic activity that people depend on.
So it's a really comprehensive kind of legislator that really encompasses everything, not just the cities. And so why would someone be opposed to the Green New Deal?
Well, and I think it's important to note the Green New Deal right now in Oregon is a framework. There isn't a legislative proposal yet, but I think folks are thinking about how do you get all these parts and pieces to work together. And the vision is really important. Again, showing people that at the end of the day, you end up with something better is really, really important. And I think getting people bought into that better vision is tremendously powerful. Why would people be opposed? I mean, I think it's real to say that, you know, there are vested interests. There are people who are making a lot of money off of fossil fuels and continuing to use fossil fuels. And this is asking for a change in the energy that we use to power our lives. And so I think there are vested interests and, you know, they have a profit motive to maintain the current system. But that's not necessarily in society's best interest.
So going back to what you said about the Oregon Environmental Council being driven by the needs of the people, the original New Deal was Roosevelt's response to, you know, the Great Depression of what was happening then. And I was wondering, in your opinion, do you think that the Green New Deal is a response to the 2015 summit or the Paris Agreement to kind of, you know, respond to what was said during that summit?
I think the Green New Deal is a culmination of so many different factors. Yes, absolutely. The international conversations about climate change and climate impacts and the scale of change that we need are certainly a motivator for conversations like the Green New Deal or other ambitious proposals to move forward on really, really meaningful climate action. But I think it's also the fact that, you know, here in Oregon, Salem had undrinkable water in 2018 because of forest fires that went past drinking water supplies, heavy rains and warm temperatures that then created algal blooms. Prairie City out in eastern Oregon ran out of water in the same year because of drought. Climate impacts are real. They are upon us, and they're hurting people. And this next generation of leaders who are coming of age with all of these impacts around them and knowing that we also have solutions at hand, we're just not deploying them quickly enough, they're seeing the threat that is very real and here day to day. And they're also seeing the potential for real solutions that, again, lead to healthier lives and better outcomes. And of course, they would be demanding this change and saying, let us make that change now. This is not a distant future problem. This is about our lives. This is about our well-being. And this is about making sure that people are taken care of along the way. So yes, it's international conversations, but it's also what we're seeing in our own backyards. It's the wildfire smoke that are, you know, driving elderly people inside for months at a time, closing down festivals and food-to-coast, you know, outings. This is really about, you know, looking at making sure that we have a livable planet, that we have adequate food supplies into the future, and really taking hold and saying we want the benefits and the opportunities right here in our backyard too. So I think all the conversations really about making forward progress on climate change are wrapped around all of those values and the urgency for that change.
Yeah. And with the student protests and the different groups and organizations that are in Portland and also, you know, nationally and some of them international, like Extinction Rebellion, does the OEC support them, or is there anything, have you ever worked together with these kind of different organizations in town? Like how is there any kind of support?
Yeah, so I have to say that me personally as, you know, an individual, but also as a mom, I have a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old. I am so inspired and moved by the youth climate movement. We have worked collaboratively with a lot of different groups. And again, I've worked on this for a decade in Oregon. So going back to 2015, when we hosted the first People's Climate March, I was part of that planning community, really working across the board and trying to think about how do we engage, you know, health voices? Where are the faith voices that can come and show that moral leadership? How do we build a movement and show that people will go into the streets over this issue, that people will come together peacefully and demand the beautiful change that we all deserve and need? So we were part of those efforts back in 2015. As part of the Renew Oregon Coalition, we have worked really deeply with youth leaders. We have rallied with them on the steps of the Capitol. We've been with them at press conferences when they so eloquently state with such clarity why this change is so important and what's at stake. We will be supporting youth voices as they continue to do communications work. We're going to be working with a number of young people on a documentary project to really feature youth leadership and try and inspire other youth in other states to also take action. Last June, I was down in Arizona for a family vacation, and I met with a 10-year-old boy. And he said, I care so much about this, but I don't see this happening as much in my state. And I said, his name is Aaron. I said, Aaron, I want to introduce you to these incredible young leaders in Oregon that I have the privilege of working with. You would be so inspired and empowered. And I think there are a lot of little Aarons around the country who also need to see themselves represented and lifted up and see that they have power in their own voices. And it really has made a difference. I think our legislators and decision makers are really motivated when they see young people standing up and speaking out.
And if there are any listeners that are interested in helping out the cause, is there any kind of volunteer opportunities or any kind of local chapters or organizations here in Portland?
Yeah, so if people are interested in getting engaged, there are a lot of different ways to get engaged. And the first thing that I would say is that it's critically important to be civically engaged. Climate change, again, requires systems change that requires policy change. And so we really need people to be out there contacting their legislators from the governor on down to, you know, city council members, as well as your federal delegation too. And the way you can get engaged and get connected, there's a number of different ways. I would really encourage people to become members of Oregon Environmental Council. We let people know when there are opportunities to weigh in and at just the right time and just the right moment. Is there an important committee hearing that you can show up and testify at? Is there an email that you can send, or is this the right time to pick up the phone and call your legislator? We let people know when there are opportunities to come together as a community and rally at the Capitol. We'll be organizing some climate lobby days for February, and we want people to know about it. So please sign up and get on our list. The Renew Oregon campaign is also really important and is a great way to find volunteer opportunities as well. It's everything from, you know, getting together to make signs for rallies and protests, to also showing up and testifying. But getting engaged and raising your voice is really the most important thing that people can do. And there are a number of different organizations that are working on climate as well. And if you really care, you know, more about renewables, there are organizations specifically focused on that. If you care about electrifying transportation because you want to cut air pollution, save money, and cut climate pollution, there's a number of organizations working on that as well.
Wow. And that's they can go on the website and get the initial information for that?
Yep. If you visit Oregon Environmental Council's website, it's www.oeconline.org, or you can search for Oregon Environmental Council, and you can find us and join us. We would love to have your support.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Tammy, and you are tuned to Popular Education Radio. We were just listening to my interview with Jana Glostam, who is a Deputy Director of Programming for the Oregon Environmental Council. We were just hearing of the different ways that you, the listener, can get involved in making the world a better place by being environmentally conscious of what you are doing. Coming up next, we are going to hear more about the actual position that Jana has and what she does on a day-to-day basis. Thank you very much. You're tuned in to Popular Education Radio. So, being the deputy director of the Oregon Environmental Council, what does your average day look like, and what is exactly the position?
Yeah, so this is a new position I'm getting to step into as deputy director for programs at Oregon Environmental Council. And what it really means is that I have the honor and privilege of supporting all of our programmatic work. So OEC works on clean and plentiful water. We work on reducing climate pollution and supporting transportation options. We work on reducing toxics in the environment, and we're building partnerships with rural parts of the state. And underpinning all of that is making sure that we have sustainable economies and healthy communities. So as deputy director, I will get to work day to day with all of our really talented program people. So we have folks working on setting up conversations around water throughout the state and thinking about, as the state of Oregon sets a water vision for the next 100 years, that different voices are heard in that, and that we're also factoring in not only sort of the pipes and infrastructure, kind of the hard gray infrastructure, but also how we're harnessing natural systems and green infrastructure to deliver the benefits that we need far into the future. We have a wonderful new environmental health program director that is going to be continuing our work on reducing toxics exposure for kids. So a couple of years ago, we passed the Toxics Free Kids Act, which requires reporting and disclosure of harmful chemicals that are in products that kids are exposed to. And then it requires that they be phased out and replaced by things that are not harmful. And so the first round of data from that program is in, and so we'll be analyzing that and thinking about what the next steps are for that program, but also how do we continue to reduce exposure for broader communities as well. Mm. Our transportation work is really great. We're bringing together transportation advocates from around Oregon to really think about coordinating efforts and thinking about who is working on what pieces that need support. How can we support other people and their efforts and actions? And what is the next big statewide push on transportation that will need to be done in coordination with a number of different groups? And of course, we're continuing to push on really ambitious climate solutions for the state of Oregon. Oregon really needs to hit our own greenhouse gas reduction goals and targets. We need a lot of other policy solutions that are in place. We would love to see a cap on climate pollution. We would love to see polluters pay for their emissions and then reinvest back into community solutions. So I get to work on all these program areas and use the decade of experience that I've gained here in Oregon to benefit all of our program areas. And it's really exciting. I'll get to create new partnerships, be part of new coalition efforts, and continue the push for great state policy.
In which project, either ongoing or future project or something in the past, are you most excited about?
This is sort of like asking a parent, like, which do they love the most? I'm going to do that great thing and say I'm really excited about all of them. Part of the reason I've stayed at Oregon Environmental Council is because we are a multi-issue organization. My background is in climate and clean energy, and my heart will always be in that space because I think climate change impacts everything we care about, our air quality, our water, our food systems. Transitioning to clean energy really can benefit everyone. But I am personally a monthly donor to Oregon Environmental Council because of our toxics program. And as a parent, you know, you wake up every day and you think about how can I set my child up for success? And if there are hidden toxics in the food wrapping that they're exposed to or the products that we put on them, that adds more worry and concern. And it makes me feel proud to be part of an organization that is thinking about people's well-being, you know, from the moment they take that first breath of air all throughout their life. And so I really love our toxics work for that reason. And then I think that there's no denying that water is really the next big area that is going to require a lot of focus and attention. Our water quality is not as good as it should be, and we have new threat accruing to our water systems. And so we need to get ahead of those challenges and be really thoughtful as a state. So I love the whole portfolio of what OEC works on, and it all excites me quite a lot.
Yeah, it sounds very exciting and sound like you have a really, really busy every single day of the week, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, I would rather be busy than bored.
Yeah.
All of these issues are really, really important to people's lives. They have a really tangible impact on our day-to-day. People want to be able to turn on their tap water and know that it's clean and healthy and reliable. And to do that, you know, requires thinking about the whole system. Our forests being protected so that we have natural filtration and protection for our waterways. Are the pipes in our schools updated and are they healthy? And are we testing for new threats like toxic algae blooms? It's really that systems thinking that I think is really interesting and powerful. And at OEC, we get to do constant learning and we get to build new partnerships every day. And I think that's the best type of work we could possibly be doing. And it really thrills me to be a part of it.
Now, when you say partnerships, do you also partner with the universities and the schools and stuff like that? Or is it mostly with just like the state level?
OEC's had partnerships at all sorts of different levels throughout the years. We do partner with universities. We've been able to partner with research universities around a whole variety of issues. Most recently, we have some collaborations on water, and we'll be doing a series of listening sessions throughout the state in partnership with Portland State University. We have a member of the OSU faculty who is one of our board members and helps to keep us up to date on kind of the research that's happening that is more rural focused and agricultural focused. We have had partnerships with, you know, South Coast cranberry growers who are interested in making sure that water quality was maintained. Oregon grows some of the best cranberries in the world, but cranberries were also going into just sort of the general commodity market. And so Oregon cranberry growers weren't necessarily getting recognized for the quality and the sustainability practices. So we helped them create sort of new markets and new brands that recognize the sustainability and quality of Oregon cranberries. That was called the Clearwater Cranberries Project a couple of years ago. We've also partnered with wineries who really care about climate change because grapes are a really climate sensitive crop. And they wanted to know, like, how do we assess our energy use? Where do we find more efficiencies and opportunities for renewables? And so it was a collaboration and voluntary project, and we helped connect them to analysts who could help do that energy assessment and that carbon footprinting, and then find opportunities to reduce their energy use or move to more renewables. So that was a really neat collaboration. And then we collaborate with all sorts of other groups who care about statewide policy or educating the public. I'll be meeting later on today with a group of elders who really care about climate change and intergenerational equity and want to know how they can get more involved and engaged. So all sorts of different types of collaborations and partnerships.
Yeah, that's awesome to know that there are actual wineries that are interested in their, you know, have that environmental consciousness and want to test themselves and see where they're at. That's really good to know.
Yeah, you know, there is a lot of leadership in a lot of different sectors. There are a ton of business leaders who really care about climate change or clean and plentiful water, reducing toxics, because, you know, they're members of our communities, and there's a lot of people trying to do the right thing. And I think it's really important that we think about how do we set up the rules of the game so that people who are doing the right thing really are rewarded, and then the laggards, you know, need to come up to the similar standards. So we really appreciate the folks in the business community who are showing that kind of leadership. And I think things like the B Corp movement is also really important, so that you're building people and planet as well as profit into your bylines.
Good evening. I'm Tammy, the host of Popular Education Radio. And coming up next on the program, Jenna is going to share with us a couple of tips on how we can maximize our efforts to minimize our global footprint. I'd like to take the time and thank Jenna for agreeing to be interviewed, and also for the council for all the great work that they're doing. If you are interested in participating in the efforts or becoming a volunteer, then you can go to the Oregon Environmental Council website and figure out how you can do that online. Besides that, I'd like to thank you, the listener, for listening. Again, my name is Tammy, and this is my program, Popular Education Radio.
So what can people do to minimize their footprint or maximize change in the world? I think the very first thing that people do is get civically engaged. And I mentioned it before, but I think it's important to underscore it. Your elected officials have to know that you care about this and that this is an urgent priority. So people really need to overcome this feeling of cynicism that the world is going in the wrong direction, get engaged and be agents of change. Really, really show up at town halls. All legislators hold constituent coffees where you can go and show up and have time to talk with them. Raise your hand, raise your voice, and let them know that you care about these issues and they need to be addressed now. Phone calls are also really important, and email actions, and you can even find them on social media, although not all elected officials have Twitter accounts even today. But show up and be heard. Raise your voice. Talk to your neighbors, your friends, your family members, and encourage them to also get engaged. It's so, so critically important when we need systems change for people to be speaking up. And then there are things that you can do in your own life. If we're looking at where the majority of climate pollution comes from in Oregon, it's from the transportation sector. So anytime you can make a choice that's not driving alone in a car, you're helping out on climate. So when can you make that bus trip? When can you carpool? Can you switch to an electric vehicle? Can you walk and bike? And what do you notice when you walk and bike? Are you having more conversations with people? Are you noticing the seasons change? There are all these other benefits that come from reducing your impact and pollution. What we buy also really matters, and how much we consume. So things like you know, the electronics in our lives, buy something that's refurbished rather than brand new, and keep it for as long as you possibly can. That really, really matters. Eating lower on the food chain is also really important. So we can have cumulative impact, but make all of this fun and build community around it. Think about, you know, having a potluck with friends and sharing like your low carbon recipes. Make it something that really builds connections with people. All of these things really can make us healthier and stronger and more connected. And so I encourage people to find the joy in the improvements they can make in their own life. I have found that the days where I've ridden the bus, especially with my young daughter, it's amazing the number of people who want to say hi to a little kid and have a conversation and really have, you know, connection. And I've always enjoyed those moments. I bike commute with my daughter and we get to talk about the change in seasons and we get to notice, you know, the flowers and the plants along the way. All of that gives me joy. And I really encourage people to look for those places where change feels meaningful and is something that they want to spread and build community around.
That's beautiful. You know, because I always, and even I'm personally guilty of it, when you are aware and you read the news and you hear what's going on, and it just, it's crippling. And it's, you know, you painted it as such a beautiful, joyous kind of, you know, community, and, you know, do all these things and have people with you while doing it. And that's just totally the opposite of, I think, how just a lot of people are going about it when they might feel a little overwhelmed or they might not know what to do. So I really appreciate that. That really sounds beautiful.
Well, I think it's important. Again, you know, I think what really people want at their core, right, they want healthy communities and they want access to those solutions and those opportunities. They want connections with people. And there are vested interests, again, who benefit and profit from divisiveness and pitting people against each other. And really, if we're going to make the change that we need all of these solutions. And so I love and appreciate and support groups that are working on different issues, but are all connected and pushing towards positive change. Mm. I might not be able to work on everything in a day because there's only, you know, 24 hours in a day. But I'm so grateful for the other people who are out there making that positive change too. And knowing that there are other people out there inspires and motivates me too. And again, at the end of the day, we end up with healthier, more livable communities when we invest in society solutions that give people options, that clean the air. So at the end of the day, this is really about a better world. And, you know, change sometimes can be hard when things are different. I understand that it takes people some time to get used to that. Mm-hmm. But really what we're offering is something better. So I hope people feel motivated about that. And I know we can get lost in the direness of the headlines, but that can't stop us. If that slows us down or puts us on the sidelines, we have to be able to reconnect and, again, find the places where we can contribute. We don't have to each do it all ourselves, but that's why it's great to be part of organizations like Oregon Environmental Council or any myriad of other great organizations working on any number of important issues. Just being connected and contributing, I think, is really valuable.
Oh, yeah. And I really appreciate you taking the time out of your obviously very, very busy schedule to speak with me and tell the listeners about the programs at the Oregon Environmental Council and talk a little bit about the Green New Deal. One last question, and I'll let you go. What are some common misconceptions or maybe some myths that you would like to bust about climate change?
What are some myths to bust about climate change? I think the first is that it's not a far-off problem. Climate change is happening today. It's in our backyards. It is making food prices increase. And the other myth is that it's not unsolvable, right? So it's here today, it's urgent, but there are solutions immediately at hand. And the biggest challenge really is just political will. And political will can change with people power and people raising their voices. So every letter to the editor that is written that says this is important and urgent is adding to the solution. every time someone makes a decision to choose the cleaner option is changing market demand and sending signals that we want cleaner options as well. So this is real. There are real tangible solutions, and people are working every day to make it better. So we don't have to be put on the sidelines because we're worried that we can't make the change that we need to make. So I think it's really about embracing that immediacy and continue to stay motivated to get the solutions that we deserve.
Yeah. So it's here and we can do something about it.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you so much for taking time out.
Well, thank you so much. And I can't tell you how much we appreciate community radio and thinking about how we get good information out to community members. So I so appreciate the role that KBOO is playing and the opportunity to have a conversation. And we have really talented staff that work on a whole variety of issues.
Are there any upcoming events that the council is having or sponsoring?
Yes. So we have a couple of forums coming up that I am excited to let people know about. In January, we will be talking about clean transportation. So cleaner air, a healthier climate, and less traffic, win-win strategies. It will be in late January. It's a business and environment forum. And then in March, we'll be talking about the Green New Deal and what it means in Oregon. We'll be thinking about what are those kind of principles and platforms, what are the different parts and visions, and what role can Oregon play in furthering that vision. So we're excited to be having these conversations, and we welcome people to come and join us.
And will there be members of the OEC, or are you having outside speakers come in?
We will be having panels of outside speakers. So we'll facilitate and we'll bring people together for really great conversations.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wasn't that a great interview? I really, really enjoyed that. My name is Tammy, and this is Popular Education Radio here on KBOO Community Radio. I just gotta say, I really enjoyed hearing all of that, especially the part about all the different ways that people can, expand and gather a community in the struggle and in the fight of trying to stop climate change. So that was really nice. And also the part about the businesses, that there are certain businesses that are actually aware. I'm really surprised. It's interesting how there are all these different avenues and the whole idea of looking at the big picture, you know, all the systemic issues and how to really have an impact, we need to change and start thinking more systemically and how those changes can be made. So I really appreciated that. It was really very interesting, very enlightening. And again, thank you so much, the Oregon Environmental Council, for all the work that you do, and Jenna especially for agreeing to be interviewed. And don't forget about the events that are happening in January and March. And if you're interested, again, you can go online. And if you have any questions for me, you can do so. Tammy, your host of Popular Education Radio. You can hit me up on the social medias, handle name at Popular Education Radio, or on the email, populareducationradio@gmail.com. Anyways, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, you can hit me up. I really enjoy doing this, and if you have any suggestions, I'll be more than happy to take them. And that'll be just about all for tonight. I'd like you to remember,
popular education is a form of freedom.